about a dentist who is practicing in another part of this country who just found out that his receptionist / accountant had been embezzling money from him. She had worked for him for 15 years, had no clue that she was doing anything like this, and he found out quite by accident that anytime a patient would pay with cash, she would keep the cash for herself and mark that the bill had been paid in full. He has no way of knowing exactly how much money she has taken from him over these 15 years, but it's probably in the thousands and thousands of dollars. Obviously, he fired her, but has decided not to press criminal charges against her. What do you think her response to that was? She asked him for a letter of recommendation so she could find another job. Can you believe her audacity? He not only chose not to press criminal charges, he also is not pursuing a civil suit because he recognizes that amount of money it would cost him in legal fees to push this in a civil court would probably not be recovered by what he could get back from her. But in return for his graciousness, she asked for even more from him. And what would you think of him if he actually wrote that letter and said, "Here's a good worker, you should hire her"? You'd probably wonder about him, wouldn't you? That's the situation we face in the parable that Jesus has told that we are looking at this morning. And if you have your Bible, I invite you to open it to Luke's Gospel, chapter 16, starting with verse 1. Luke 16, verse 1, what is commonly called the parable of the unjust steward. Most scholars and Bible commentators agree that of all the parables that Jesus told, this one parable is probably the most difficult to interpret, because it seems that Jesus is not only condoning wrong behavior, he's actually holding it up as an example and praising it. Now, obviously, Jesus wouldn't do that, but to discover what the lesson is for us can be challenging. So I invite you to join me in looking at this parable and seeing what we can understand Jesus really wanting us to take away from this story. It tells us about a rich man who had a steward, and charges were brought that this man was wasting the rich man's goods. As Jesus' listeners are hearing this, they're probably imagining that this rich man owns huge, vast amounts of property. And what would commonly happen at this time is that the rich man would divide up his property and lease out portions of it to farmers to farm, and there would be an agreement made that in return for allowing them to farm the land, they would pay the landowner so much money. The steward was given the responsibility of overseeing all of that, of making sure that the tenants would pay the proper amount of lease money when harvest time came. But apparently this steward was embezzling money. And a report of this comes to the rich man. And the rich man tells, verse 2, calls the steward to him and says to him, "What is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward." The rich man gives the steward no opportunity to defend himself. He simply says, "I've heard this about you. You're fired. Turn in the books." Now, what is probably amazing that the listeners to this parable were not expecting is the rich man simply firing his steward. What was his legal right and what they would have expected him to do would be to take the steward and his entire family and sell them into slavery. It would be a form of punishment, as well as an attempt to recoup some of the money that he had lost. But he doesn't do that. In an act of graciousness, he just fires him, lets him go. And that was something that the listeners were not expecting to hear. That steward should have been punished. He should have been sold into slavery, but it doesn't happen. The rich man is gracious and simply fires him. What's also surprising is that the steward does not attempt to defend himself. He doesn't say, "Who told you this? How can you be sure that this accusation is correct?" Normally, he would have attempted to defend himself, either by discrediting the accuser or by suggesting that there was some good reason for him doing what he did. But he doesn't do that. He just silently accepts the rich man's decision. And what that indicates is that this steward recognizes his true condition and is honest about himself and accepts it. The rich man tells him, basically, turn in the books, give me what you have, and be gone. But before the steward does that, notice what he says. Verse 3, "What shall I do since my master is taking the stewardship away from me?" And again, he's being honest about himself. "I am not strong enough to dig." He still needs to support his family, but he recognizes that he is not strong enough to do manual labor. And then he says, "I am ashamed to beg. It's too humiliating for me to beg." But on top of that, he recognizes that he's not fit to be a beggar. In order for a beggar to be successful, there had to be something that would stir up the pity of the people walking by. Some obvious handicap like blindness or missing a limb. This steward had no such handicap, so no one would pity him, no one would give him money. So he can't beg. So what does he do? Verse 4, "I've decided what to do so that people may receive me into their houses when I am put out of the stewardship." And that phrase, "receive me into their houses," what's that all about? Well, that's actually an idiom from this time that basically means, give me a job. I'm going to do something so that when people find out I'm no longer steward, they'll give me a job. And what does he resort to doing? One by one, he calls his master's tenants. And they come, and the first one comes, and he asks, "How much do you owe the master?" Basically, what are the terms of your lease agreement? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said to him, "Take your bill and sit down, quickly write 50. 100 measures of oil. Bible commentators have done some calculating, and 100 measures of oil was worth about what the average laborer could earn in 3 years. So I think most of us consider ourselves average workers. Think about how much you would earn in 3 years. That's what this person owed. And the steward tells him, "Cut that in half, and we'll make your bill just half of that." How much money would that be? Well, just in round numbers, if you earn, say, about $100,000 in 3 years, that is removing $50,000 of your debt. Pretty nice, huh? And the next one, 100 measures of wheat. And he tells this one, "Take your bill and write 80. So he's eliminating 20 measures of wheat. And commentators say that's about the same amount of money. You're looking at roughly $50,000. Different percentages, but still a significant amount of money. And the tenants are thrilled, obviously, to have their bills reduced like this. But word of this gets back to the landowner, to the rich man. And how does he respond? Again, he could have punished the steward, but he doesn't do that, which again indicates the graciousness of the master. And in this parable, the master represents God. God is gracious. He could punish us for our sins. It would be his right to do so, And no one in the universe would argue against God punishing us, but instead he is gracious towards us. Doesn't give us the punishment that we deserve. Instead, he treats us according to our need. The master here is gracious. But what does he say about his steward? Verse 8, the master commended the dishonored steward for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. Verse 8 is where we run into some difficulty, because the master commends the steward. But you need to read the verse very, very carefully. What does the master commend? He commends the dishonest steward for his shrewdness. He doesn't commend the shrewd steward for his dishonesty. He is not commending dishonesty. He is commending shrewdness. What the steward did was wrong. Do you agree? He was still cheating his master. He was dishonest. He was lying. He was stealing. What the master commends is his shrewdness. Would you like to be described as shrewd? I think most of us, when we hear that word, we kind of see it in a negative way. And I can remember growing up, because my father was a contractor, he was in business, sometimes he would refer to other contractors as being really shrewd. And whenever I'd hear that, I'd think, then that must not be a very good contractor. But if you look up the word means being wise and astute and sharp in very practical matters. Would you like to be described as shrewd? It's actually a compliment to be told that you are wise and sharp in very practical ways. And that's what the master was commending in his steward. He was very wise. In a sense, he was being very honest and truthful about himself. He knew his limitations. He knew what he was not capable of doing. And so he compensated for that by using his wisdom in a dishonest way. But he was still using wisdom. And that's what Jesus is saying we need to do. Use our wisdom in very practical ways. Jesus concludes the parable in verse 9. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous mammon, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal habitations. What has that got to do with the parable? Well, the steward found himself in a crisis. He was losing his job. He was losing his ability to bring income into his family to support his family. And in this crisis, he used his wisdom and his astute mind to figure out a way to provide for himself and his family. When you are in a crisis, how do you respond? Do you realize that you are in a crisis right now? Do you know what that crisis is? The crisis we are all in right now is the imminent return of Jesus. Jesus is coming soon. That creates a crisis. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to live your life? And Jesus specifically talks about the use of unrighteous mammon. And what is unrighteous mammon? That's a term that refers to wealth or possessions, your money. How are you using your money now? In light of the fact that Jesus is coming soon, what are you doing with your money? Jesus is raising an issue in a very, very practical way, telling us that the world is going to end. Jesus is going to come. What are you doing with your money in light of that reality? Are you going to be creative and wise and astute and using your money, or are you just going to let it go to waste? Because when Jesus comes, what happens to all of our money? It'll burn. It's worthless. What use are you making of it before that? Are you going to use it in a way that will prepare you for heaven? Or are you going to use it in a way that'll end up having you burn with your money? It's interesting that this parable follows the three parables that Jesus told in chapter 15 of Luke. Three famous parables about lost things: the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. And in all three of these parables, the focus is on God, how gracious and loving he is towards us, and how God does everything he can to save us. And it's easy to walk away from those three parables and think, well, I don't need to do anything. God does it all for me. God's so good, I can just relax. Jesus follows up those three parables by this one parable. And the message is, we need to be wise. There is a responsibility that we have to use what God has given to us in a way that will help us be ready for heaven. How are you using your money? I need to let you know that it is a concern to me when our church budget income does not match our budgeted expenses. And when it goes on year after year after year, it's not a healthy way to operate our church. And I want you to know that it's not just about the money, because the money is simply a symptom of something much deeper. The money is an indication of where our spirituality is. And I'm not saying give more money to the church. I'm saying make sure your heart is right with God. Because when your heart is right with God, there is no question in my mind that this church will never have financial challenges. We will have more than we need. It's simply a matter of how you choose to use your money, whether it's for building up God's kingdom or for self. God is saying here through this parable, prepare for eternal habitations. Make sure you're using your money in a way that will help you be ready for heaven. Let me ask you this question. If you knew that Jesus was coming back in 1 week, how would you live the next 7 days? Would those next 7 days be any different from the previous 7 days? My guess is that it would be very different. That you would do everything in your power to make sure that your heart is right with God, and that you would do everything you could to help those that you love be ready for Jesus' coming. Well, in a sense, that's the kind of crisis that we are living in right now. Jesus is coming. We don't know when exactly, but he's coming. And he wants us to be ready. And in order to be ready, we need to be shrewd. We need to make wise use of our lives so that we can be ready to enter into those eternal habitations. We trust God. But at the same time, we need to use our wisdom for his glory and to prepare us for his kingdom. May that be your experience each moment of every day.